This week, the Apache Tomcat or Apache Foundation patches Tomcat because it has a remote code execution flaw. New variants of the Mirai botnet continue to spread and also be detected. Hackers use credentials of a Microsoft support worker to access users' webmail. TikTok track. The smartwatch flaw is affecting kids being able to be tracked. That company is based out of Australia. Ecuador, who was harboring Julian Assange, we were talking about that before the show, has suffered a 40 million cyber attacks after the Julian Assange arrest. So they did not make friends doing it. Well, they made some friends and lost some. Security weaknesses in popular VPN clients and an open source tool from FireEye that automates analysis of flash files. In the expert commentary, Jason Wood makes a triumphant return to the show to talk about the impact of cyber warfare. All that and more on this episode of Hack Naked News.
This is Security Weekly, for security professionals by security professionals. Broadcasting live from G-Unit Studios in Rhode Island, it's the show that brings you the security news each week. And despite popular belief, we do wear pants. It's Hack Naked News.
Let the team at Black Hills Information Security test your defenses. With over 10 years of experience in penetration testing, red teaming, and threat hunting, the testers at Black Hills will help you find the holes in your security before the bad guys do. The team at Black Hills cares about educating and sharing their knowledge by creating countless blogs, open source tools, and webcasts for you to learn more about the tradecraft of pen testing and red teaming. Visit securityweekly.com/BHIS to join their mailing list and view the latest blogs and webcasts from Black Hills Information Security. Hey, welcome everyone to Hack Naked News, episode 214 for April 16th, 2019. I'm your host, Paul Asadorian. Make sure you register for our upcoming webcast. That's right. If you go to securityweekly.com/webcasts, there's going to be a whole bunch of webcasts. I think we're doing three in May and three in June. So if you like our webcasts or you don't, give them a chance. Go to securityweekly.com/webcasts. They're going to be awesome. If you missed a webcast, those are posted on the site as well. It's securityweekly.com/on-demand. The next webcast is by ServiceNow. So if you're struggling with prioritizing your vulnerabilities that you find on your systems, which as I found, especially working for Tenable, a lot of people struggle with that, and it's okay. We're here to help you along with ServiceNow, who has a really great solution, in my opinion, to help you do that. And now, the security news for this week. Apache Tomcat has patched an important remote code execution vulnerability being tracked to CVE 2019-0232. It resides in the CGI interface. Remember that? Wow, I haven't said CGI in the context of a web application in some time. It's a servlet when running with Windows with the enable CMD line arguments enabled. The flaw ties the way the Java runtime environment passes command line arguments to Windows. The quote reads, when running on Windows with that particular command line argument, the server is vulnerable to remote code execution due to a bug in the way that the JRE, of course, passes arguments to Windows via the CGI servlet, which is disabled by default. The CGI option enable command line arguments is also disabled by default. But a lot of people enable stuff like that, I would imagine. So there is a fix for it, according to the Apache Foundation. New variants of Mirai botnet are targeting more IoT devices. This article seems to come around every few months, maybe 6 months or so. This time, researchers at Palo Alto Networks Unit 42 Security Research Unit have published details of new samples of the Mirai botnet discovered in late February. The new versions of the botnet malware targeted, and let's get this all right now, Altera Neos 2 Open Risk Tensilica Extensa and Xilinx Microblaze processors. Wow, that was like a mouthful. These processors are used in a wide range of embedded systems, including routers, network sensors, baseband radios for cellular communications, digital signage, and digital signage processors. The new variants also include a modified encryption algorithm for botnet communications and a new version of the original Mirai TCP SYN denial of service attack. Based on the signature of this new option, Unit 42 researchers were able to trace activity of the variants back as far as November 2018. My take is these attacks will continue as the Mirai is source code is open source and available. I'm not sure if it's licensed under an open source license, but anyone can go access the source code to Mirai, which was a fantastic read, by the way. If you haven't read it, it's awesome. So an attacker can do this by compromising embedded systems flying under the radar. Typically, these systems, of course, have no user on the system or protections that detect or prevent attacks. Given that it's a perfect storm for Mirai to keep just spreading and morphing and changing, as is evidenced by today's news uncovered by Palo Alto Labs Unit 42. Hackers used credentials of a Microsoft support employee to access webmail of Microsoft users. From Microsoft, they say, we've identified a Microsoft support agent's credentials were compromised, enabling individuals outside of Microsoft to access information within your Microsoft email account. Microsoft said in a letter or email to the victims, they go on to state this unauthorized access could have allowed unauthorized parties to access and or view information related to your email account, such as your email address, folder name, subject lines of emails, and the names of other email addresses you communicate with. But so it doesn't say they had access to the content of the email. However, according to a motherboard source who purportedly witnessed the attack and screenshots he or she provided, the attackers were able to see the contents of some affected customers' emails. Also, it was disclosed that the attackers gained and kept access to the abused Microsoft internal support portal for at least 6 months. That's a pretty long dwell time. And of course, account takeover attacks are difficult to detect. We talk a lot about insider threats on Enterprise Security Weekly. This is certainly one of those cases. TikTok Track, a smartwatch based out of a company based out of Australia, has some flaws that could be used to track kids. Technology, my take on this, is technology aimed at kids needs to have better security across the board, as we see stories like this quite often. The story reads, researchers at Pentest Partners revealed vulnerabilities in the watch sold in Australia on Monday, which could enable hackers to track a child's location, spoof the child's location, or view personal data on the victim's accounts. The parent company TikTok Track is, the parent company is iStaySafe Pty Limited, has temporarily restricted access to the watch's service and app while it investigates further. Researchers found that the service's backend does not make any authorization attempt on any request besides the user having a valid username and password combination. It wouldn't be a show if we didn't talk about the Julian Assange saga, which I just find the story wildly, and all subsequent stories wildly entertaining. Jason just put one in our Slack channel just before the show started with Julian Assange eating lobster laying in bed. So it's kind of interesting. The Ecuadorian government, who has, of course, extradited Julian Assange and revoked his citizenship from Ecuador, is now suffering 40 million cyber attacks. This is hacktivism at its finest. The Undersecretary of the Electronic Government of Telecommunications Ministry, it's quite the title, confirmed that groups linked to Julian Assange launched volumetric attacks that blocked access to the internet. Government websites were hit by massive DDoS attacks that isolated them from the internet. Most of the attacks targeted websites of the foreign ministry, the central bank, and the president's office, and the Internal Revenue Service, and several ministries and universities. So the attacks were very widespread as a backlash. I just don't understand why Julian messed all this up. I think he had from the pictures that the New York Post put on their website, it looks like he had a pretty good deal. Now, on Thursday, I was kind of confused why this was all happening. And like on Friday, I read articles that said he was Julian Assange was spreading feces in the bathroom, never changed his clothes or showered, and was generally rude to people. Then it came to light that he had some pictures of the Ecuadorian president, Lenin Moreno, and he was going to blackmail the president with those. So all of those things combined, especially the blackmail, is what eventually led to the arrest of Julian Assange, which now I imagine he's not in such a nice place. Security weaknesses in popular VPN clients. This sounds pretty bad. So far, the issues have only been confirmed in applications from four vendors, Palo Alto, F5 Networks, Pulse Secure, and Cisco, but others could be attacked. As the issue is surprisingly basic one, that applications have been insecurely storing session and authentication cookies in memory or log files, which renders them vulnerable to misuse. The cert explains if an attacker has persistent access to a VPN user's endpoint or exfiltrates the cookie using other methods, they can replay the session and bypass authentication. An attacker would then have access to the same applications that the user did, obviously through the VPN session. Fixes are available and more details can be found in the link in the show notes. An open source tool from FireEye lets you automate the analysis of flash files. I don't know how many people are still using flash. I guess there are some sites still using flash. Largely, flash has been on the decrease and a dying, thank God, technology. Dubbed Flash Mingo, though, the framework integrates with analysis workflows as a standalone application, but can also be used as a library that allows for expansion of its functionality via custom Python plugins. Flash Mingo takes advantage of the open Swift AS library for the parsing of SWF or flash files. It uses a large object named SWF object to store information about the Swift file. Is it Swift? SWF file, including a list of tags, information about method strings, constants, and embedded binary data. It's essentially a representation of the Swift file that's easily queryable. And Flash Mingo is available open source from the folks at FireEye. We'll take a short break and come back with expert commentary from none other than Jason Wood. The question is simple. Have any of the systems on my network been compromised? The answer is harder than it should be. Enter AI Hunter. Active Countermeasures has automated and streamlined techniques used by the best pen testers and threat hunters in the industry to create AI Hunter, a network threat hunting solution that does the first pass of a hunt for you to identify systems that are most likely to be compromised and scores the results on a scale from 0 to 100. You can then research those systems in depth with AI Hunter. Focus your valuable time on the systems that need your expertise with AI Hunter. Sign up for a personal demo today at securityweekly.com/ACM. Welcome back, everyone, to Hack Naked News. Quick announcement. My good friend John Strand. John Strand's kind of like the Han Solo around here, right? Like he's swashbuckling around the galaxy doing his thing, and he swoops in every once in a while and just produces greatness. And he's pretty good looking, too. And if you just can't get enough John Strand, because we can't either, he will be teaching active defense and cyber deception at Black Hat 2019. Please go register for his course at blackhat.com. Now, I would like to introduce also a very good-looking man, Mr. Jason Wood. Welcome.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's really good to be back. It's been a little bit.
It's nice to have you back, my friend. I mean, we had some great guests. In the meantime, a lot of sponsored interviews that really kind of ran the gamut. Some technical, all the way up to like a salesperson. Neil was awesome on the last show, so it's been a good mix. But it's good to have you back and talk about cyber war. I mean, why not, right?
Why not? Yeah. So one of the things I was reading some blog posts basically in preparation for the show that caught my eye. One was called "The Impact of Cyber Warfare" on InfoSecInstitute.com, and the second post was called "Why Ransomware Continues to Be an Immensely Profitable Business for Bad Actors." And as I was reading through these posts, I was thinking about one of the challenges that we have in security is to keep up on things like this without getting without losing sight of what we're trying to do overall in our organizations to protect them. It can be really tempting to get kind of hyper-focused on cyber war or whatever it is, whether that maybe you're promoting the idea or debunking it. But you know, if we do, then we run the risk of ignoring critical things in our organization and maybe implementing or doing things that are duplicating efforts or otherwise just in messing with our ability to efficiently detect and respond to these types of.
I think what you described is very similar to the way I look at it as well, is that you should have external threat intelligence, but like, don't get hung up on it, right? Like, it's really cool to look at what the bad people are doing
right
in the world in terms of cyber crime, but understand that largely that's happening outside of your network. And what I tend to direct people to is gain an understanding of what's happening on your internal network first. I mean, it's good to have that external view and understand attack. I mean, that's critical to defense, right? I mean, much of the training that you and I have either instructed or attended at, for example, the SANS Institute, right? Whether it's an offensive class or defensive class, you got to learn how the attacks work. So,
yeah, exactly. And, you know, one of the things I think the challenges you're hearing about some of this stuff is I need to know what this attack is or what this type of activity or this threat actor out here is doing. And then do some analysis to see how this is, what do I have in my environment to detect or respond or, you know, prevent some of that activity from happening? And do I have any kind of gaps in it? Now, this can also be further complicated when somebody from, you know, like I referring to Dilbert, the pointy haired boss, comes running in screaming because the Elbonians are on the move attacking or businesses everywhere. And they get freaked out, and all of a sudden you get tossed down a rabbit hole chasing after some of these things. But at some point, you know, you need to step back and take a look at how this applies in your environment. Now, in my day job as a threat hunter, I see lots of interesting activity playing out in different organizations. And a lot of times it falls down, if these issues fall into categories like something wasn't patched or somebody clicked on an attachment or went to a website or whatever, they executed something they shouldn't have on their system, and then bad things start happening from there. The attacker gets that initial foothold and then they go about doing their thing. Now, if I have some threat intel, like Paul was talking about, I can start to maybe see what it is they're going to go after, or at least have an idea of what that might be as I'm seeing the attacks and be able to tie it back, maybe recognize that, oh, this is this type of attacker who's interested in Bitcoin mining or what have you. You know, at some point, you know, we need to detect that and respond back to that and make sure that we have the right things going in inside of our environment. Now, you know, the cyberware war thing, I mean, we could look at and say, well, that could play out in a lot of different ways. Ransomware is maybe a little bit more defined set of actions that could occur inside of our environment that we could take a look at and do some analysis. So let's take a look at ransomware. What is the threat that we're interested in here or that we're concerned about? For ransomware, you know, you want to take a look at how does it get in and do the initial infection? How does it spread? Does it come in via a phishing email and then spread via an exploit that occurs, you know, taking advantage of a vulnerability that's present inside of an organization? So how are we going to defend against that? Some things that, you know, as I'm thinking of ransomware, what would be defenses that I would want to have inside of my organization? Well, I want to have some kind of email filtering going on. I want to have employee training on how to handle that because email filtering doesn't always catch everything. Surprise, surprise. And employees don't always do the right thing. You've got that subset of folks out there that just have to click on that to see what it is. So we need to be able to detect that. We need to have patching done properly so that in the case of like WannaCry, it's not spreading via a known vulnerability that we've had a patch available to for 2 years. And yet I see that happening. We need some kind of detection on the endpoints, and we need backups to be able to recover from it. Not only backups that we have available, but offline backups so that they can't get, you know, so we have somewhere to go if our online backups get encrypted by the ransomware as well. Now, obviously, that is not an exhaustive list. there are more things we could add to it. But doesn't that sound like a lot of things we should be focusing on already inside of InfoSec? Now, we may find that we have gaps in particular areas as we're analyzing this particular threat and say, oh, hey, I need to beef up my detections on emails. I need to detect, beef up how our process and how we respond so that we can respond quickly. Certainly some of these ransomware issues, once they get inside your organization, they can move very fast. And so we need to have
that up so that we can
respond quickly.
I was just going to say, state and local governments particularly have been affected, I think, more so than many other organizations or that category of types of organizations. I think they represent some lower hanging fruit due to, you know, limited budgets and just that technology not really being the focus as much as if, well, let's say you're in the financial sector, right? And so there's some differences there, and likely part of the cyber wars, or it's like an ongoing cyber attacks on all fronts from nation states, right? They're probably picking on the state and local governments with ransomware attacks, as it's very fruitful. And also, a lot of state and local governments will just pay the ransom because they don't have the resources to do the cleanup. Now, that's not happening in all cases, right? But it's a major problem.
Yeah, and there were some, if you read the blog posts on the ransomware stuff, they gave some examples. They actually had one, a municipality out here in Utah where I'm at. They paid the ransom and were fortunate to get their data back. They might not, even if you pay the ransom. But you know, other organizations, they listed some that just flat out folded. They didn't want to pay the ransom and they didn't have any ability to recover. And so they were done, which is kind of an interesting decision. But I don't know what their situation was. That was what made sense to them. You need to, but you need, with the example like state, local governments, even, you know, larger federal government agencies or large organizations, you know, speed and efficiency to respond to some of these things is not always built into the organization very well. And you need to have the ability, or somebody in the organization needs to have the ability to have that get fired off quickly. So that we can start responding fast. And if that's a gap we have on the side of our organization, then we need to start doing things to address it. My point about all of this is a lot of these issues, be it a nation state coming after you for some reason, or just ransomware hitting you, or whatever the attacker is, we're covering a lot of these types of attacks or whatnot in some way inside of our organizations already. What we need to do is take a look at them, these particular threats, how they play out into our security program, where do we have gaps, where do we need to beef things up, and not let us be driven by the individual threats to the point that we forget to take care of the larger picture and how they fit into our organization, what it is we're trying to defend. So you want to keep things, like I said, keep things manageable and part of the overall program. Recommend take, if you're interested in these topics, take a look at the blog post. They have some interesting things here to read through and think about and consider for your own organization.
Fantastic. Jason Wood of Paladin Security, thank you so much for appearing today on Hack Naked News. Thank you everyone for listening and watching. We'll see you next time.